Tick-tock. The clock is ticking on the 2022 Georgia election. Primary day is next Tuesday, May the 24th, with voters casting ballots for governor, U.S. senator, and many more posts, including local seats such as school board president and recorder's court judge. Today on The Commute, we look in-depth at the election, and we have a conversation with Georgia's preeminent politics insider, Professor Charles Bullock, as well as interviews with Chatham's judicial candidates. From SavannahNow.com, this is The Commute Podcast, presented by National Office Systems. I'm Adam Van Bremer, opinion columnist and a deputy editor to Savannah Morning News and the host of this twice-weekly podcast focused on news and happenings in and around Savannah. Today is Thursday, May the 19th. The focus of today's episode is the 2022 election, and my colleagues Will Peebles and Raisa Haversham will bring you interviews with the election VIPs. But first, this ad for the podcast presenting sponsor, National Office Systems. Here at the Savannah Morning News, we are in the midst of planning some changes to our offices. Just earlier this week, I was talking to our building manager about it. I know that whatever we decide in terms of our space, we're golden. Why? Because we are clients of Savannah's premier office design and outfitter, National Office Systems. They'll take our space and figure out how to put the cubicles in and pick the right furniture, just make it a very pleasant and productive place to work. National Office Systems works with Savannah's own Dirt Modular Interiors on those layouts, and they also partner with two of the most iconic brands in office furniture, Herman Miller and, more recently, Knoll, whose products have just become available through National Office Systems. Learn more by visiting www.natoffsys.com. That's www.natoffsys.com. And with that, we'll move on to reporter Will Peebles in his interview with Charles Bullock, a professor at the University of Georgia who has been following politics in the state of Georgia for a half century.
Yeah, so Charles, do you have anything that you got your eye on this year as the primary approaches? Any races in particular?
I mean, generally, one thing, big story I think will come out of this will be, how do Trump's candidates do? You got 10 of them. You know, some are going to win, some are going to lose, I suppose. All of them win, and gee, eight, 5 out of 10. And if he does, you know, some of his that he will get will be ones which you really can't take. I mean, he will take credit for it, but he shouldn't be given credit for it. As if Herschel wins, yeah, I mean, Herschel, you know, he's going to do well with or without Trump's endorsement. Same thing for Marjorie Taylor Greene. Yeah, you know, they were not going to be hard pressed. But if Trump's candidates play for Attorney General, or insurance commission win, yeah, that would be amazing.
Yeah, that will be something if you know, the down ballot races go. But obviously, we can't talk about Trump endorsed candidates without talking about Old Purdue and Brian Kemp. They're coming down to the wire, and from everything I'm reading, AJC put up a story the other day that was a callback to their old story. Where is David Perdue? Where in the world is David Perdue? How do you see his campaign, and how do you see that lining up as we close the election, or at least the primary season here?
Yeah, it looks like, you know, all the indications are that Kemp's going to win without a runoff. These polls I've been seeing have him in the low 50s. He's got tons of money. Purdue has never had much money, and apparently he's not raising any at all now. And I think it's also significant that some national figures are coming out to get on Trump's, on Kemp's bandwagon. So we've got Mike Pence coming to Georgia to campaign. And that clearly shows if anybody about a break between him and Trump, which helps potentially prepare Pence to run for president in 2 years. And then George Bush is hosting a fundraiser for Kemp out in Texas. And there's never any love lost between the Kemp's, between the Trump's and the Bush's. But Bush might well have just stayed out of it unless he thought, yeah, this looks like a surefire winner here.
Yeah, I thought that it was interesting that he pulled back in and he got those. And, you know, with Christie coming down, that's another big one. I remember the poll that your colleague Trey Hood did. And Purdue didn't benefit too much from that Trump endorsement, at least not as much as the down ballot races
about
did.
About 2 points, yeah.
Yeah,
just 2 points.
Yeah, just two.
Yeah, so that may be, I guess, maybe the single biggest story is if Purdue does lose and lose badly because Trump has invested so so much energy in him. And maybe not a lot of money. He's going to have $500,000 on this. But I mean, Trump has been cussing Kemp for since November of 2020 and saying that Kemp is his top priority to try to take out, et cetera. So type of, you know, you've got a lot of psychic energy invested in that one. If he loses that one, I think that would sting. I think that's also a big story, a story not just in Georgia, but potentially across the nation. And I would think, you know, the two biggest embarrassments for Trump would be if Brian Kemp wins and if Liz out in Wyoming wins, Liz, former vice president's daughter, Liz Cheney.
Yeah, and you know, I was reading this morning the follow-ups to yesterday's primaries in other states. Pennsylvania had a couple, and some of these Trump candidates are losing, and some of them are winning. It's kind of a split, and I don't know. The question that came to my mind is, does that show anything? Does that show that you know, Trump's endorsement really even had that much of a sway in other states, or this is, you know, for the most part, these candidates just running off their own name recognition, like, you know, some of, like, you know, Dr. Oz up there running for Senate. It's like, is he, I feel like he's got his own name recognition. I don't even know if he needed Trump, kind of like the Marjorie Taylor and the Herschel here, you know? I don't know. Like, are you watching these other races around the country?
I think at a minimum, what it says is Trump's endorsement is not magic. If there's magic, then, you know, you get the magic, you win.
Right.
So it's not magic. And I think, again, the poll that Trey did kind of opens the door to an assessment that it can help under some conditions, but not necessarily all conditions. Where can it help most? Well, in a low visibility contest, where voters don't have much other information, and therefore, if they're told, you know, this is Trump's candidate, most Republicans look like they probably still get behind that. But if they've got other information, certainly in our gubernatorial race, they've got all kinds of other information. So you have to rely upon Trump's endorsement to kind of give them an idea of, you know, what's out there. So in those kinds of contexts with more information available, maybe that Trump endorsement helps only at the margins. I mean, maybe if it's, you know, the two candidates locked at 48-48 or something like that, yeah, Trump's endorsement might not be sufficient. But we also saw yesterday that the Idaho governor, who's probably gone after all, won again. So it may be that for an incumbent with a good reputation, Trump really can't do much about it anymore.
Yeah, the endorsements, I guess, just... That's interesting. You know, I feel like I've spent a lot of my coverage time for this primary talking about the Republican races because it is so interesting, the dynamic of Trump and the establishment party and the split there. But I guess are there any Democratic races you're watching? Where's the interest on the other side of the aisle?
Yeah, I think the most interesting one is that 6th congressional district, the two incumbent women running against each other. I mean, that's a significant one, I think, both in terms of its usability and enjoyment, but also national. I think it'll get some national coverage, whichever one of them comes out and wins. Both were promising, you know, kind of newcomers, and both would be kind of individuals that the Democratic Party would love to have the bill on, but the only one who's going to survive.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. But I feel like with Stacey in it, the field at least for the governor's race was set. You know, I don't think anybody in their right mind was going to challenge Stacey Abrams for that Democratic nomination. What do the Democrats have to do? We've seen these early voting numbers kind of reflect what we've talked about here, where it's primarily Republicans going into early vote. I haven't checked the numbers of the absentee ballot super recently. But I know last week there was only like a 600 vote difference in absentee ballots between Democrats and Republicans. What do you make of that? Is that lack of Democratic interest, or is that a lack of Democrats feeling like they need to vote in the primary?
Maybe it's a lack of COVID. Particularly in the primary 2 years ago, Raffensperger sent out the request form to every registered voter, so you didn't have to do much. Send it back. Get a ballot. And voters were much more concerned about COVID. You know, everybody was masked back then and not going out as much. So the opportunity to be able to vote and not have to go and mingle with other people on election day was much more attractive 2 years ago than it is now, where masking is becoming increasingly uncommon and people are trying to go about and live their lives as it is pre-2020. So I think that's probably a lot of it. The incentive would go up in numbers in 2020 if they're not there.
Yeah, I got you. That makes a lot of sense, you know, especially the absentee mail-out thing. You forget how quickly you forget that even happened. that was a wild year, the delayed primary and everything.
Yeah, that was the big news. From 2020, every day, the reports of how many thousands of people have died. So, if you're at all concerned, man, I don't want to get out there just getting this dread disease.
Yeah, right. Another kind of a Democratic angle that I saw today was that some Democratic voters are actually taking the Republican ballot in the primary. Just because Georgia has open primaries, you can vote for anybody or take any ticket. I guess, like, do you think that that's because of the Trump candidates just going in there to stop Trump? What do you make of people voting across their usual party lines?
Mainly an effort to come out and reward Brad Raffensperger for standing up to Trump, abiding by the law and the Constitution. At one time, then it's kind of the question you're interested in, what else do they do? Do they then go through and try to assess who might be the weakest Republican and vote for that person that set them up for a defeat in November? Raffensperger is the reason they do it. Well, they're going to be confronted with that whole range of contests.
Who are you going to vote for Lieutenant Governor, for example? Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah. Well, Charles, I appreciate it, man. Any other parting thoughts?
I guess not. No.
Gotcha. Well, Charles, it's always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much. And you take it easy.
Thanks to Will and Dr. Bullock. I always enjoy the professor's keen analysis. Before we bring you interviews with the judicial candidates, a word about the upcoming Coastal Empire High School Sports Awards. Presented by the Georgia Ports and sponsored by Chatham Orthopedic Associates, the award show returns to an in-person format this year after 2 years of virtual shows. The Best of Preps is scheduled for 7:30 p.m. on Monday, June the 10th at the Johnny Mercer Theater. The Atlanta Braves great Andrew Jones will be the keynote speaker. You can help us celebrate our local student-athletes by purchasing tickets at sportsawards.usatoday.com/coastalempire. One more time, that's sportsawards.usatoday.com/coastalempire. You can also go to savannahnow.com, click on the sports tab. When you get to the sports homepage, you'll see a link there to go ahead and purchase some tickets. That's an easier way to do it than to try to remember and type in that URL. So there you go. Now, to the judicial races. The races for seats on the bench are always among the lowest profile on the election ballot. But this cycle, we have a competitive race for an open seat on the Chatham County Recorder's Court. Reporter Raisa Haversham talked to the candidates. Here are excerpts from those interviews.
Thank you, Richard Sanders, for joining us for The Commute. I know you're one of three candidates running for Recorder's Court judge. Just tell us a little bit about yourself and your platform.
Yes, absolutely. Well, first, thanks for having me. Thanks for giving me this opportunity. So as you said, my name is Richard Sanders. I am running for judge of Chatham County Recorder's Court. So whenever I start introducing myself, I start off basically with who I am as a person. So I am married to Crystal Sanders. She's a nurse working at Summit Cancer Care. Actually just graduated with her family nurse practitioner degree. We just celebrated our 15th wedding anniversary. So I usually start off by saying I'm a husband, and because of her has allowed me to do the things that I've done and be where I am. But I'm also a father. I have twin girls, Riley and Mackenzie, who are 11, who frankly are my whole world. And so I start off with that so that you can kind of understand who I am as a person. As far as background, I am the son of a naval officer. Basically, my dad was retired Navy, did 20 plus years in the service, joined the Marines fresh out of high school, then joined the Navy, got his undergraduate degree with the GI Bill, went back to school in the Navy, went to OCS. I was born in Fort Benning, which is over in Columbus, Georgia. My grandfather's retired military, so that's kind of the connection to Columbus. My father's from Phoenix City, Alabama. So anyway, that's where I'm from. I went to Georgia Southern for undergrad, went to a place called Thomas Cooley in Lansing, Michigan for law school. Came back to Savannah in 2007, worked at Hunter McLean doing an internship over there in their litigation department. And then after that, was hired with Doug Andrews, a litigation attorney here in town, and a pro tem municipal court judge in Guyton and Garden City and a few other places. And been practicing with him ever since. In 2011, I was sworn in as a municipal court judge in the city of Bloomingdale. Since that time, I've served as a pro tem judge in Garden City. I've sat in Richmond Hill Municipal Court. I've sat in Pembroke Municipal Court. I've sat in Pooler Municipal Court, Port Wentworth Municipal Court, basically filling in when the judges of those courts needed someone. And then for about the past 2.5 years, I've been sitting as a pro tem or part-time judge in juvenile court at Chatham County. And so all of that kind of comes together of why I'm running for recorder's court. So ultimately, I knew ever since I was a little kid, I wanted to be a lawyer, that I enjoyed helping people. I enjoyed serving the community. And so when I had the ability to get sworn in as a municipal court judge in Bloomingdale, I jumped at the chance. Basically, I was assisting the judge that had been out there, kind of filling in when he needed it. Like I say, kind of doing the grunt work for the judge. Basically, you know, I would be the one they'd call at 2 a.m. so they didn't have to wake up the other judge when they needed to address something. And so as I progressed through that, I realized that the real ability to help people, the real ability to make changes in someone's lives, became from the judicial perspective, from the bench, the judge making the decisions. And so as I continued through my work in Bloomingdale Municipal Court, I continued to see the effect that I could have on people as the judge making the decisions. So when the position in Recorder's Court opened up, I figured now was my time. Now was my time to step up, to be able to serve on a greater scale, on a larger scale, to be able to serve more citizens, which Chatham County Recorder's Court does. And so my platform starts with experience. I'm the most experienced of the three candidates. I've been a judge for frankly longer than either of them have been lawyers. My other part, when I'm trying to discuss a platform, you know, it's hard as a judge to come up with a platform because, you know, as a judge, really the idea is you're supposed to be fair and impartial for the facts and circumstances of your case, and the case in front of you. And so my platform is really just a description of who I am. So experienced and then compassionate. I think that's a big part of what makes me a qualified judge is that I understand that the person in front of me is a person. And sometimes compassion is what's needed. And so I've described myself as experienced and compassionate. And those are probably the two biggest things that I bring to the table over and above my opponents.
Thank you so much, Joe Huffman, for joining the Savannah Morning News' commute. I really appreciate you just coming here, talking a little bit about, I know you're a candidate running for recorder's court judge, and just talking a little bit about your platform and what you plan to offer to Savannah and Chatham County residents. So just tell us a little bit about yourself and your platform.
Well, first, good morning. Thank you, Ms. It's Havisham, correct? Mm-hmm. Thank you for having me, for the invite. So a little bit about myself. I'm from Savannah. I went to Windsor Forest Elementary School, then Durham Middle School, Savannah High School, and then the Arts Academy. My focus early on was in undergrad was music. So I got a bachelor's in music performance at Oberlin Conservatory, then came back home to Savannah. And my brother Andrew and I were trying to look for a way to get involved in the community, saw that there was a job openings with Savannah Metropolitan Police Department, the police. And so we applied, interviewed, got hired, and we both started at the same time, just working as police officers, serving the community, responding to calls for help through 911. I mean, that's where I spent all 4 of my years, was as a patrol officer. And then that reintroduced me to the world of law, legal, court system. I had done some in high school mock trial. And so I studied applied and got into law school at Georgia State University. And so while at Georgia State, I got my Juris Doctor, and then I also got a Master of Public Administration from the Andrew Young School of Policy Studies at the same time. Then came back home again. And once I came back home, I put to use the experience I had as a police officer and my law degrees and opened my own practice. And I started representing individuals on an appointed basis. So out of the 1,400 or 1,500 people I've represented as their attorney, 98% of those I've done so as an appointed attorney. People who can't afford attorneys, you know, you have a right to the assistance of an attorney if you can't afford one, and one can be appointed to represent you. And I was on multiple lists to be appointed, adults and children through Chatham County Juvenile Court. So I spent my time as my entire career so far as a lawyer in the realm of criminal law, either representing individuals charged with crimes as their attorney, and then juvenile advocacy, representing kids as guardian ad litem through juvenile court, probate court, just advocating on their behalf. I would go and advocate for them at school expulsion hearings, housing hearings. I would maximize my orders of representation in those ways. And I did that for many years. And then in 2016, got an opportunity to be the city prosecutor for both Pooler and Port Wentworth. And so then I started to get experience in the area of criminal law prosecuting cases at a city level. And then that shortly thereafter, I got an opportunity to be appointed to be a judge pro tem or part-time judge on a fill-in basis with Garden City Municipal Court. And then since getting that pro tem position, I've sat and I've now developed my practice, well, not practice, I've developed my experience of sitting as a judge in different courts. I sat in about six different courts, Pooler Municipal Court, Garden City Municipal Court, Port Wentworth Municipal Court, Chatham County Juvenile Court, Bryan County State Court, Lutawisi Municipal Court. I've sat and presided in those courts as a judge. I've presided over about 7,500 cases, ranging from initial appearances, bond hearings, preliminary hearings, motion hearings, and bench trials. So other than jury trials, as a judge, I have presided over everything possible in a criminal law matter. And so basically, from the experience of being a police officer, defense attorney, prosecutor, child advocate, and now a judge, I'm trying to take all of that background experience and put it to use in trying to become a recorder's court judge.
All right. So we'll go ahead and jump right into it. Thank you, Anthony Burton, candidate for recorder's court judge, for joining us on the commute. Let's just jump right in. Tell us just a little bit about yourself and your platform.
So I have been an attorney since 2014. I started out being a prosecutor in Douglas County. Before that, I interned in Solicitor General's Office of City of Atlanta, 2015. I came to Chatham County. Meg Heap hired me. I worked there until this year. And my platform is I'm ethical, experienced, efficient, effective. So I've been a trial attorney for a while. And the way that you always end up remembering everything that you need to talk about, give yourself four words and then three words and go in and talk about each one more in depth. So, but I guess we'll probably do that later on.
Let's touch on those three words that you mentioned, and correct me if I get them out of order, if I leave one off: ethical, efficient.
Ethical, and experienced, efficient, effective.
So when you say that, what do you mean?
So ethics to me is very easy for an attorney, because we are the only profession that I know of where everything that you need to know to be ethical is written down. It's the law. You follow it as written. The only difficult part is it's about 60 volumes and 300 years of case law that you have to be up to date on. But being ethical means following the law as written, as intended. Experience. During my time in the DA's office, I started counting how many cases that I've personally handled from start to finish. And it was a pretty laborious task. You could only do so many cases by each date, or it would cut off. So I have to go in and say, okay, how many did I do this month? How many did I do this month? Okay, I did more than 300 and it won't show up, so I need to cut this month in half. So I finally got to 8,000 cases that I've personally handled about halfway through. And I decided I could stop counting. No one is going to be able to have that level of experience when it comes to criminal cases, which this part of Recorder's Court is purely a criminal court. So I have handled everything from a seatbelt violation, drinking in your car. Both of those are just punishable by a fine, $15 for seatbelt, $150 for having a drink in your car, open container. I've done DUIs, traffic. I've moved on to Superior Court. I've done domestic violence, aggravated assault, aggravated battery, rapes, drug cases, you name it. I've seen from one end of the spectrum to the next. And then efficient and effective really go hand in hand. And it comes with the experience too. So having dealt with so many cases, I am aware of every program. I'm aware of what works, what doesn't work. I can look at someone. I used to joke with my judge that I used to work in front of, Judge Abbott. And so, you know, Judge, I don't have a lot to base this on, but I think we might be dealing with someone with mental health, or we might be dealing with someone with a drug addiction. And the defense attorney would chime in and be, you know, Mr. Burton's right. And you can look at their record. You can look at, you know, their booking picture, those different things. And you can really get an idea of the issues facing someone that comes before you. And not only is it a knowledge of what the programs are that work, it also lets you know what doesn't work. So one of the big things that I've been running on is the bond issue. And one of the cases I tell people about all the time are that I had a case that by the time it got to me, the individual had 5 separate felony arrests. The first one was breaking into a car and he was given a bond. That's what bond I would have given. He made it maybe about a week. And then he was breaking into another car. He was released out on bond. About a week from that arrest, he's breaking into another car, stealing a gun. He was given a bond on that case. That's a bond I would not have given, given the time period between the two incidences. Had I been the judge, he would not have been able to go on to get the next 3. The last one being a home invasion with a stolen gun that he arrived to in a stolen car. So you need to know what works, treatment programs, mental health issues, and Gateway. We do a lot with them, but you also need to know what doesn't work. And what doesn't work is letting someone out 3, 4, 5, 6 times. I've said before that Chatham County is being second, third, fourth, fifth chance to death. And a big thing is that they're just not following the law. They're not being ethical when it comes to bonds.
You know, to that point, you know, I did want to ask, you know, why are you running for Recorder's Court judge? And, you know, what are you hoping, I guess, either to offer residents?
So the thing that really got me started, that made me decide I was going to run, I was in the DA's office. And in 2020, COVID hit, in case anyone wasn't aware, COVID hit and it changed the way that everything happened in the courthouse. The courthouse was basically shut down. Everything was done through Zoom. It was took all the fun out of being a trial attorney. There was no more courtroom. Anyone that's a trial attorney wants to be in a courtroom. And the law was thrown out the window. So it stopped turning into what can we do to administer justice, to let's get everyone out. Let's make sure the jail is empty. We don't need to worry about arresting. We don't need to worry about prosecuting. One of the cases that always comes to mind with this one is I had an individual that in 2019, he was a violent felon. He had 7 prior felonies. At least 2 of them were violent, aggravated assaults, aggravated batteries. And we met in 2019, defense counsel, myself, the judge. I went over his record. I went over his new charges. It was trafficking in cocaine and possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. And at the end of that hearing, judge says, okay, this individual is a risk to the community. He's a risk to reoffend. And we're not going to grant bond. Jump forward to I believe it was April of 2020. It might have been May. We get together. Nothing on his case has changed. The only thing that's changed is now we're in COVID era. And he's released out over my objections. And it took him about a month, month and a half before he then took a metal pipe to an individual's head, busting their orbital socket. It was an elderly individual. Not being mean, but under Georgia law, anyone that's over 65 is considered an elder, and it can be elder abuse. And busted his orbital socket for the $20 in crack money that he was owed. I kept seeing things like that. I saw murderers being released. I saw rapists being released. I saw people with child porn. I saw one guy that had enough fentanyl to kill every single person in Chatham County four times over. And I just said I couldn't sit back and not do anything anymore. Is this position that I'm running for the end all be all? Am I going to be able to make every single call and every single case and fix Chatham County all on my own? No. But it is a small step in which I think I can take and which I can do a lot of good for Chatham County. So I know my opponents have said, well, you can't set a bond in recorder's court for a murder. I go, you're right. That's correct. What I can do is set no bond in that third, fourth, fifth case where that individual is actively searching for a gun to commit that murder and stop that murder from happening. That's how I can help Chatham County.
Thanks very much to Raiza for leading those discussions. It should certainly help voters as they get to the bottom of their ballots next Tuesday. And that's all for the Thursday commute. Thanks one last time to our presenting sponsor, National Office Systems. Before I sign off, remember that we publish new commute episodes every Tuesday and Thursday. Whatever your interests, you will find interviews of interest in our archives. Earlier this week, for example, I talked to Bike Walk Savannah's Kayla Brown about cyclist and pedestrian safety and Savannah's strides in developing trail networks such as Tide to Town. Check out that episode by searching The Commute with that Savannah Opinion on your favorite podcast app. The Commute returns next Tuesday when we'll discuss the new Kia plant that is headed for Savannah. We will talk to you then.